Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com.
For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events,
sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Everybody, thanks for being here at the show tonight. I want to thank our sponsor again, TBILaw.com, Gordon Johnson, and Craig Cecilia, who started Brain Injury Radio Network and is kind enough to have us doing a 7-night-a-week show. Hello, I see people waving at me in the chat room. We do have a chat room, so you can either call and listen to the show on 424-243-9540, and if you have a question, you can press 1, and we'll have a little bit of discussion soon. And if you log into the program, it would be Brain Injury Radio Network. You'd go to Blog Talk Radio and then search Brain Injury Radio, or I've got it posted on my Facebook page at In a Flash. Tonight I thought we'd talk a little bit about one of the biggest offenders that impedes people in recovery, and that's resentment. It destroys more people in recovery because from it stems all forms of spiritual disease. For we've not only been mentally and physically ill, but it also makes us spiritually ill. When our spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with our resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. The most heated bit of letter writing can be a wonderful safety valve, provided the wastebasket is somewhere nearby. I was thinking about back right after I had my brain injury, and I never asked why me. To be honest, I was probably one of those people who thought I had it coming. For past discretions, I didn't ever ask why me, but I did get frustrated and angry that I wasn't banging on the same, how many cylinders are there? Eight cylinders that I had been before. Thought processes that used to come to me easily were more sluggish or didn't come at all, and it would make me very angry. And anger is a natural feeling. We wouldn't be normal if we didn't feel anger. But when anger is stoked and re-felt time and time again, the same source of the anger, then it becomes a resentment. The French say that the derivative is to re-feel. And I've seen some things floating around on some Facebook pages and some other places where some topics continue to come up, and it just reminded me of things in my past that I haven't been able to let go of. And after I had my brain rupture and faced my mortality, a lot of the things that used to anger me before just didn't bother me anymore. And I was affiliated with a group of people in recovery, and one of the sayings they used to use a lot, still do, is this the hill you want to die on? And that just means that we've got so much coming at us all the time, and so many of us with brain injuries have what I've been known to call full basket syndrome or sensory overload, so that when we get too much coming at us, it's hard to deal. I've likened it to taking a full file drawer and dumping it out on a windy day, and you're just grasping to try to get those things back where they're supposed to be and filed in the right places, and it gets so frustrating when you just can't grab it. And so one of the things that people in this room talk about a lot, another one of the symptoms, residuals, that a lot of us get, aside from the full basket syndrome and the sensory overload, is we get fatigued more easily. And I thought, as I was looking at a couple of posts over the last few days, I thought, wow, what can make you even more tired than hanging on to anger and letting it fester into a resentment? It takes so much energy. And I get tired already. You know, I get tired already, and I've got to budget the amount of energy I have in a day's time and prioritize the things that I want to get done. A couple things happened. After my rupture, I almost died, so I realized there was a lot of things that I thought I had all the time in the world to accomplish and experience in my life, and I realized that none of us has a guarantee. We get up in the morning, and we might not see the end of the day. And so, on one hand, I wanted to experience everything that I had missed. I wanted to experience everything yesterday that I had planned for the rest of my future. And again, this was at age 35 that I had this aneurysm rupture. And so I just wanted to go 100 miles an hour and do and be and accomplish and experience and live my life. But when I tried to do too many things, it really wore me out. And when I'd get really worn out, I'd get sick. And I think, you know, my resistance would come down. And so I was reading this article. This came from, in fact, I'll type it here in the chat room, or maybe one of you can do that for me. I'm going to give you a website. It's AAMET.org. That's the Association for the Advancement of Meridian Energy Techniques, AAMET.org. Thanks, Jenny, in the chat room. Knew I could count on you. I did a show on EFT, which is Emotional Freedom Technique. I'm not sure if it was on this radio show or my old one, In a Flash Recovery Now, and we'll have that show again or revisit it. That's one technique of recovery, like many others that we talk about on here. But here's an article off of their website. I'm just going to read you, and this will give us a basis for discussion, and then feel free to call in. This is called How Suppressed Anger and Resentment Affect the Body. If you do not bring forth what is within you, it will destroy you. But if you bring forth what is within you, it will heal you. That's from the Gospel of St. Thomas. How do these emotions affect the body, and how important is it that we clear them? Emotions can either be expressed or suppressed. When you express them constructively, they tend to lose their power over you, even if it's just talking about it, writing about it, or even banging a pillow on your bed and shouting at it. You're releasing the feelings, but without causing harm to anybody. Functional there. When you suppress your emotions, one of two things can happen. They can churn away inside of you, building up until they burst out like steam from a pressure cooker. But even just letting a little of the steam out of the pressure cooker will keep things under your control. Or they can turn on your body and show up as disease and illness. There's plenty of research to suggest that holding on to negative emotions is the root of many illnesses, which means that letting go of these emotions can have an amazing impact on our health. Studies have shown that people have what's called nonverbal type 2 personalities. Those who are shy and non-assertive have greater prevalence of tumors than other personality types because shyness is associated with suppressing of emotions, particularly negative ones like anger and resentment. Reverend Michael Berry, PhD of the Cancer Treatment Centers of America in Philadelphia, showed that almost two-thirds of cancer patients identified forgiveness as a personal issue for them and that one in three of them had severe forgiveness issues. They were holding on to their resentment and their anger, their bitterness, and it was literally eating them away. I'm not saying that's true for everyone who has cancer, but it's certainly something to consider, says the article. In his book, David Hamilton talks about hard marriage, hard heart. A study in Utah in 2006, couples who were supportive and caring towards each other had healthier hearts and arteries than those who were hostile and unforgiving towards each other. I know many people have a big issue with the word forgiveness, but I see forgiveness as the same thing as letting it go. Some people see forgiving as giving something to the person who has wronged them, so letting go instead may be a different thing for them entirely. You don't have to give anything to anyone then, unless it's to yourself. So just think about it. Letting go of emotions that we've suppressed could be a major prevention of cancer, which is very significant when you learn that 24% of deaths in the UK and 23% in the US are caused by cancer. This person says, I have a favorite quote. Interestingly, this person who wrote this article credits it to unknown. And it's funny, I read this after I titled the show tonight, so apparently a lot of us have heard this quote, but holding on to resentment is like drinking poison and hoping it will kill your enemies. So it appears that by holding on to resentment and anger, and they're suppressed, you're really holding on to them. You quite literally are poisoning yourselves because these negative emotions release cortisol and adrenaline. Cortisol and adrenaline are hormones or chemical messengers which in excess can lead to all sorts of illness and potentially damaging changes in your body, like a depressed immune system. Have you noticed how certain conditions flare up when you're stressed or run down and you get a cold or your eczema, irritable bowel, migraines, fibromyalgia, back pain, those type of things flare up? You can even put on weight because cortisol can lower your metabolic rate and lead to more fat deposits around your waist. Now they tell me. There are other health risks too. You can also suffer forgetfulness, have difficulties in learning new things, have a reduction in bone density so your bones can become brittle. Surely it's time for us to let go of these emotions, express them, and let them out in a constructive and non-harmful way, because the implications for your own health and for the health of the whole world, especially the developed world, are staggering. Of course, anger is a useful emotion. We all need it to give us feedback that something has happened that has crossed our boundaries or that our rights have been violated in some way. If you get angry, you're more likely to do something about it. The trick is to step back from anger and make a rational decision about what you're going to do, because when you're in a state of emotional arousal, you don't make the best decisions. The primitive brain is in control, the fight-or-flight response is kicked in, and the reasoning conscious mind has to take the back seat. Sometimes this is very useful, particularly if you're in real danger and your instincts for survival and safety have to take over. Excuse me. Having an argument with your boss, for example, or going to the dentist isn't life-threatening in the same way, however, that being confronted by an animal that wants to eat you is. To the primitive brain, however, the threat is the same, which is why we get those same feelings of rage, which is fight, or fear, which is flight. There aren't any woolly mammoths around now, but we're still exposed to life-threatening events. We have war zones, people who mug other people, but in most day-to-day situations at work and at home, you can step back, calm yourself down, and then make a better decision. Now, this article talked a lot about people that suppress their emotions, but one of the things that I've seen a lot that I was referring to earlier is that even in my own case, but in the case of a lot of people who have had a traumatic brain injury, suppressing the feelings isn't the problem. Voicing them inappropriately at the wrong time in the wrong place is the problem. And I have a saying, well, actually, my great-grandma had a saying, you can't unring the bell. And if I can't, initially, and it took some practice, and I'm still not perfect at it, but my evil thoughts would go through my mind, across my mind, right out my mouth without thinking first. And when that happened, I had a tendency to damage relationships that were important to me and to make people angry, and then that would make me angry. One of the things I learned is that when I would try to make a point to someone, but I would do it in an abrasive, caustic way, then my point would get lost and the focus would get put on my bad attitude or my poor delivery or my nasty spirit. And the whole thing that I was trying to have a discussion about gets lost. And so through a little practice and burning some bridges, I decided I really didn't want to do that anymore, that I needed to deal with my anger in a more productive way and address things that I can, let a lot of things go. And sometimes that's really tough to do. If I feel that I've been wronged, I used to want to retaliate. I saw some people in the chat room talking about their heritage, and I'm Irish and Italian. I used to make the joke, a great lover with a bad temper, sometimes concurrently. But the way that I grew up, you know, you didn't let things go. You know, if somebody wronged you, pushed you, you pushed harder, and you didn't let people, it was a sign of weakness if you were to let somebody get to you. And so, you know, if somebody was big and bad to you, you'd be bigger and badder to them, and it was about winning. And one of the things that I learned in recovery is that you have to surrender to win. And I thought, when I first heard that, I thought, what a ridiculous thing. Surrender, waving the white flag, a wimp, a weenie, who wants to do that? Who wants to surrender? And I realized that there was a lot of hills that took a lot of energy, made me really tired, gave me bad gastro problems, memory problems, migraine problems, sleep problems. And the things that I were upset about, the people that inflicted those things on me, they were sleeping fine. They were living their life fine, going about their daily lives, not giving me a second thought, but I was giving them rent in my head. And so not only was the initial infraction there, the thing that the person, place, or thing did to me, but I was making the problem worse by riding the dead horse all the way down and not being able to let it go. So one of the things that they were talking about was writing things down. I see I've got somebody with a question, and I'm going to pick that up in just a minute. I'm going to run through just a couple things. let's see, you one of the things you do is you write down these resentments. Because even the act of recognizing them, sometimes, you know, have you ever just felt that grouchy feeling where anybody who looks at you cross-eyed, you snap their head off, and you haven't really thought about where that's coming from. And so to sit down and think about resentments, and if a resentment could be the cause of my bad attitude today, what would that resentment be about? And sometimes I'll write down these resentments, things that somebody has done to upset me. And then I look at my end of it, because believe it or not, we always have an end in it. One of the things when I used to collect resentments and keep them up on the shelf and, you know, dust around them and pick them up and look them over and admire them from time to time. But hanging on to that resentment collection is, geez, and I lost my train of thought, like like we do. I'm sorry, I was watching the chat room for a second. I shouldn't do that. I apologize to my audience out there. But in any case, hanging on to those resentments and collecting them like that, if I actually write them down and look at them, I had a part in every single one of those things. I was the victim. You know, people were, I was fine. In fact, I even had a little bit of a handicap. I had had a brain aneurysm. I had had some hard knocks in my life. I was justified in being like I was. And I realized that there wasn't any such thing as a justifiable anger, because in every one of those circumstances that I wrote down, I always had a part in it. And sometimes my part in it was only placing myself in the position to be hurt. And maybe it's because I opened my mouth when I should have walked away. And maybe it's because I was hanging out with people that I shouldn't have been hanging out with at the time. But I needed to be able to write those things down, look at my part in it, and that takes some of the punch out of a resentment right there when you own the part of it that's yours. Then the other person's part of it, at least you put a little balance in there and know what's yours, what's theirs, maybe what's driving that bad mood, that bad attitude that you've got going on today, and you can do something else to change it. One of the other things that I found really effective is to talk to someone else about it. Now, let's say person A has really ticked me off, and I'm steaming, and I'm ready to blow, and I just can't let go of what that person said to me. It is bugging the heck out of me. I can go to that person and blow up on that person, obviously, and I may or may not get the desired effect. But what I try to do first these days is to talk to a neutral party. Now, you can pay, you know, you can pay a therapist or somebody whose job is to listen to be your psychological dumping ground, or a friend sometimes. You know, you don't want to overburden your friends too much, at least not the same friend, not every day, if you happen to have the problem every day. But, you know, friends are a good source. You know, talk to somebody else, and not in a gossip way where you're saying names, but, you know, in effect, somebody said this to me today and it made me feel this way because what do you think? And then you have a discussion with somebody else, talk it out, and then if you still feel the need to talk to the person who inflicted whatever they inflicted, then you can go and maybe do that in a more calm, productive way. That was one of the things I read in here, was about a constructive way to deal with problems that we have with other people. So, writing it down, talking to someone else about it, praying about it is something that I do. And then I'm going to pick up your call, 484, and anybody else who wants to call in. The number is 424-243-9545. 1-800-273-8040. If you'd like to comment on the effect anger or resentment has had in your life, has in your life right now, how you deal with it, how it's affected your mind, your body, your spirit, any comments, feel free to call in. So besides talking to other people and writing these things down, I pray from time to time, because sometimes I am just so stubborn or get something stuck in my craw and I can't let it go. And I realize, just like the day that I faced my mortality, that there was a power greater than me. And a lot of times when I'm into this righteous anger, I'm placing myself in the God position. I know it all. I know better than you. And I'm going to let you know about it. And everybody else who's within earshot, they're all going to know about it. And that isn't being, I have something in a support group I attend called the How of Recovery. And HOW is an acronym for honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And when I'm really wrapped up in my righteous anger, I'm not being honest, open-minded, or willing. I'm being stubborn, pig-headed, and determined to drive my point right down your throat, whether it totally clouds my point, whether it ruins the relationship, or whether it makes me physically sick in back of it. And so one of the prayers that I like the best is the Serenity Prayer. Some of you might have heard this, and you mostly hear the short version, but I'm going to read you the longer version, and then I'm going to take your calls, and I appreciate your patience. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardships as the pathway to peace, taking as he did the sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that he will make all things right if I surrender to his will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. That's by Reinhold Niebuhr. And the wisdom to know the difference is what keeps me in recovery programs. It's what keeps me doing this radio show, going to support groups, going to a therapist, doing a variety of recovery techniques, as you all know who have called in. This show's called Recovery Now, and so each week I discuss different techniques of recovery or concepts about recovery, and I've devoted my life to it, and not because I was singing and dancing and handing out peanut butter cookies and thought it would be a really good idea, but because I got in my own way many times and I crippled myself, not in the way that we think of when we talk about a physical disability or something that we incurred from our brain traumas, but the spiritual and the mental disability that I help promote myself by not dealing adequately with my emotions. And so I keep coming back to get that wisdom to know the difference, because just about the time I think I've got everything figured out, I step in a mud pie and make a mess. And so if there's something I can do productively and constructively and in a healing way with love to change a situation, I will. A lot of times I got to walk away, because even though I might be right, even though that person might be dead wrong, that's just not the hill I want to die on. So I'm going to take some of your calls now. Area code 484, you're on the line.
Hello, Kim. It's Jenny.
Hello, Jenny. How are you tonight?
Well, my sinuses are now clear after all the laughing that you made me cry over from laughter, so I am totally feeling great.
Wait, you better tell them it wasn't from the topic. This was from this was from something on Facebook earlier, people. We'll tell you about that later. They're going to think you're laughing about this resentment topic, Jenny. Or were you?
No. I love the idea of your topic of festering anger turns to resentment, because anger is something that we all, after brain injury, we all have trouble dealing with that emotion. And I've realized, don't fight, walk away. But I found a good way, an idea that I thought may help on how to deal with it when you have that anger, where you just want to just blow up and scream, yell, throw things, and no one really wants to listen or even cares. And you can do more damage than good. What I suggest that anybody try is write an email, but no address, so you don't have anybody you're actually going to send it to. Vent, get pissed, put it all out, curse, do whatever you got to, blame, just get it out. When you're done, reread it, add to it, delete things, change it, but it lets you get it out and gets it okay in your mind, and then you can reevaluate it and it calms you. Then when you're done, you delete it, because again, no one wants or cares to hear it anyway, but it's a safe, private way to get it out.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like journalizing.
Yes, it is. And you know, the one of the most important points you made that I forgot a few times is that you don't hit send. Because I've done that a couple of times in a rant. I've written that puppy down and it's been really therapeutic, but I didn't stop at the end, take that breath, and then not send it. I hit send. Wow. And there's another thing we talk about in a recovery group, and they say to use restraint of tongue and pen. And it took me so long to get that. I mean, especially with the tongue. But then when email came out, I mean, it took a little longer to write long-handed letters, so I didn't do that. But boy, email can really get you in trouble if you say what's on your mind without thinking about it first. So you brought up a great point. Do write the email, but sit on it for at least 24 hours before you hit that send button. Hopefully you won't feel the need in 24 hours to hit that send button, and you just let it go.
But if you do not put an address of who you're sending it to, you can never send it, so it doesn't ever get sent by accident.
That's really good. I'm going to do that from now on. That's a really good suggestion. You got that? Don't put the address in there first, just in case you're tempted to hit that send button when you've gotten yourself worked up to a full pitch. You know, by the end of that email, you won't have the option to accidentally hit send, because that address won't be there. Great advice, Jenny. Right on topic.
Thank you, and that's what I really wanted to share, because I found that was something that I learned to do by venting, because I needed to get some things out to family, but I knew that if I sent it, I would only hurt them, and you can't take it back once you hit that send. So I found out that if I do not put an email address, but when I'm writing it, I can put their name at the top of the letter I'm writing. So mm-hmm. It always reminds me who I'm venting to. I can't send it without putting an email address. And when I'm done, I can reread it, I can take it in, and it lets me understand why it made me feel that way. And by the time I'm done, I can walk away, I can go back to it later, reread it, and take it in. It lets me understand why I was feeling the way I did, and then just delete it. And it's over, done with, forgotten.
Right. Exactly. I think that's a great point. it's a good way to release it, you know, too, when you write it out. I mean, consider if you were having an argument with someone, but instead of doing that, you spare the other party and you put that argument down on paper, and then you either delete it, put it in the shredder, put it in an ashtray, flush it down the toilet. You do whatever you do symbolically to let it go, because now you've purged yourself of the toxicity of that anger and resentment by putting it on paper, and then you get rid of the paper, thereby letting go symbolically and literally of whatever it is that's got your goat.
Exactly. It gets the negative out and only lets the positive back in, and you can delete and you're done. Over, done with, forgotten.
Yep. Yep, that's a great way to handle it, is definitely writing it down. So I appreciate that. And we had somebody here with their hand up. If my thing is working here, all these technical terms. Area code 518, you're on the air. Area code 518, you had your hand up.
Hello.
Hello, did you want to join us?
Yeah, well, I'm on the phone. All of a sudden you went dead, so I thought I lost contact with you.
No, you're here. Who do we have? What's your name?
Hi, Ken. This is Ron. I love your show.
Hi, Ron.
I had a lot of anger issues. I had 7 years of a real bad workers' comp hearing, and I had a lot of people. You know, before I got hurt, I didn't believe in the word hate. And then after I got hurt, all the doctors that I had problems with and lawyers and workers' comp, hate was a really big word.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of stomach problems. And finally last year, about 6 months ago, I had a real bad intestinal problem. And my doctor told me it was because of all the stress I had. So I came home and I looked up on the internet, forgiveness. And every site that I went to told me, you know, that, yes, I can forgive people, but just because I forgive them doesn't mean I have to like them, talk to them again, agree with anything they do. I just forgive them.
Right.
So then I also looked up meditation. And so what I did was, I meditated, I took very deep breaths, you know, all the way down into the stomach, and let it out. And as I let it out, I'd go, I forgive Michael. And if I still had a tight stomach, I'd take a few more deep breaths, and I'd go, I forgive Michael. And I'd do that until my stomach felt pretty good. And then I'd go on to the next person, and the next person. And this took me 5 days. And the hardest thing to do was to forgive myself.
Yes.
And this was the exhausting thing I've ever done. But let me tell you what, I felt like I lifted the world off my shoulders once I forgave people. And I was like, well, you said you weren't, but, you know, I was one of those people that always said, why me? Why me? And all these nasty people that did things. But once I had forgiveness, wow, what a difference. It truly is very toxic. And, you know, like I heard on the old Kung Fu movie or show from years ago. He was having some bad dream, and his master said, Grasshopper, he goes, remember, you made the demons. Only you can destroy them. And
yes,
that is so true when it comes to this anger that we had built up in us. You know, just because Michael did something to me, like you said, he's not going to lose sleep over this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sleep over it. You know, guilt is the gift that keeps on giving. And
right.
So if you forgive Michael and Betty and Debbie and everybody in your life, including yourself, you will feel so much better about yourself. It's just amazing the life change I've gone through since I've done that.
It really is. And it, you know, it's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. And when you have been through what a lot of us have been through, strength is a premium. You know, it's not like when we were a lot younger and before we had our brain issues, it's the energy is a premium and we just can't afford to let it dwell in a place that's not productive, you know, and I think you're right, going through like a big list, what you're talking about, going through the whole list. What I meant was, it's not that I never said why me about anything, about my aneurysm, my rupture. I never said why me about that. Like I said, I didn't have a perfect past, and I probably had self-esteem issues and probably thought that I must have had that coming for something. But there were certainly times before that in my life that I used the why me. You know, and somebody said to me once in a conversation, why not? You know, we're all human and everybody's got their box of rocks. And it's just how far you want to carry them, you know, how heavy you want to let that box of rocks get and how far you want to carry them. You know, do you want to start tossing those out to make your load lighter? And I'll bet when you did the exercise you did, that was like a huge weight off your shoulders.
It absolutely was. It was. It's absolutely amazing. You know, like you said, yeah, I went through the list. I really didn't think I had a list, at least that one long. And I just started, you know, going through everybody in my life. You know, anything or everything they may have ever did or I thought they did, I got rid of it. And again, like I said, you know, the hardest person to forgive was myself. Because, like you said, once you wrote down all these discretions people had, you were also involved.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the hardest person to forgive is yourself.
I think that's true. And, you know, I forgot to do that one when I was first going through my list. I did look at my part in things. And like I said, that took the punch out of some of them when I honestly looked at my part in things, but I didn't put me on the list initially. And I realized that was a huge one. Like you said, there was a lot of things that I had to forgive myself for. There was a lot of resentment I had toward myself for the way that I had handled things, you know, different relational issues at one point in time, things that I said that I couldn't take back, things that I did that I couldn't undo, and, you know, certainly had a big resentment. And I think maybe that was the point where, you know, I said sometimes when you've just got an attitude going and you're not even consciously aware of that cross look on your face or the way you're kind of snapping out your answers to the people around you, you know, not even aware of it. It took me quite a while just to become aware of, you know, when I was doing that, you know, like somebody would say, what's wrong with you today? You know, you look like you lost your best friend or whatever it was. I'd have to sit down and think about, you know, is it something I'm sad over? Is it something I'm mad over? You know, what is it exactly that's driving this mood, this attitude? And a lot of times it was resentment. And a lot of times the anger and resentment is based in fear. And that's either fear of losing something we have or fear of not getting something that we want. So most often it's a self-centered fear that's driving our anger.
Very true.
But I appreciate you calling, and I'm glad to know that you've tried that exercise before and found it to be fruitful as well. And again, this isn't saying we don't get angry. Anger is normal. What we want to try to do is deal with our anger constructively. You know, and in a productive way, feel our feeling, which is legitimate, not try to deny it, not try to stuff it, not spew it all over everybody in our wake, and then let it go and move on. Because one thing all of us on this show have found out, whether we're a survivor or those that are caretakers out there, is that our time is more limited than we think, and it's a waste of time. We could be doing something pleasurable to spend it being cross, I guess.
Right.
But I appreciate your call, Ron.
Oh, you're quite welcome. You're quite welcome. I enjoy the show.
Thank you so much. Where are you from?
Well,
part of the country.
My father was from New York State, but I just moved to Kansas.
Really? That's funny. I thought I had a hint of, you sounded like you had a hint of New York going there. Well, we're kind of neighbors now. I'm in Nebraska.
Right, right. You're just north of me a little bit.
Yeah. How's your weather? Did you have a nice day today? It was pretty nice for winter in the Midwest.
Yeah, it was. I think it was like 37 here, something like that. And, you know, in a way I have to laugh, and I don't mean to, but, you know, they had a snowstorm here the other day and got about 2 inches, and it really flustered the people around here. You know, they're sick and tired of this winter already. And, you know, I'm from back in the Northeast, and, you know, a 2-inch snowstorm is like, okay, we got flurries today.
Right.
So, you know, it's all relative, I guess.
Well, you might be a little more sensitive down south there in Kansas and Nebraska. We're used to that. You know, we're used to it. My husband and I were just talking today about, you know, we've only really had one bad snowstorm this year. And one of the things I'm noticing is that we're not getting as much snow. When I was a kid, you know, it would start like November and December, and it would do that, you know, and go for a longer period of time. I don't know if it's global warming or, you know, what. I'm not even going to get into that discussion. But one thing I've noticed in the last few years is that we don't get a lot in November and December. And, you know, we get slammed more January, February, occasionally in March. And one year, and my birthday is in mid-April, we got a blizzard of like 13 inches of snow. And this was just one year, and I remember what year it was because something significant happened, but it was in 1987. April 16th, we got a like 12 or 13 inch blizzard. Now,
wow.
Hopefully that's never going to happen again. That was kind of a one-shot deal, I think. But yeah, I've been feeling very grateful that we haven't been having snow. So I'm going to knock on wood and hope that I didn't just curse us with that. Well,
no,
welcome to the Midwest, Ron, and please keep listening and call back in again.
I will. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Okay. Anybody else out there want to call? We've got the phone number is 424-243-9540. Nobody else got any resentments or anger out there? You guys are all squared away in the chat room.
Oh, come on. There's got to be people out there with anger and resentment that want to talk about how they themselves have come to deal with it and found a way past it.
Got to be. Oh, all right. Good. We've got area code 803. Tell us about yourself.
I'm so mad. It's Les Paul Kim.
Hello.
Well, working where I work at Walton Options all the time and meeting different people with disabilities and brain injuries and things, I've been listening to your show, by the way, and it's fantastic tonight. You've had a lot of wonderful insight and a lot of, I can tell you really worked hard on this. You always do, but I mean, it's just hitting home with me with people I know. And people. Today I had a very hard time working with a person that has a brain trauma that's caused him so many problems. And it sounded like you were talking about this person. And I had to literally, when I left work, I had to literally lay it down and say, I've got to go home without this burden on me because I feel the pressure of this person. And it, it made me feel sad. I mean, when you're working with another person as a brain injury survivor, and they too have a brain injury, sometimes you'll take on what they're carrying inside of them, the hurt and the heartache. And this person had so much hurt and has had so much bad things happen in their life. I'm saying, my goodness, I thought I had it bad sometimes. And just listening to your insight was very helpful. It helped calm me down over some of the things I was thinking about today. I was trying to help this person so much that I almost forgot about myself.
Well, and you bring up a really good point in that, too, and that's, you know, Jenny talks a lot about negative, you know, not being around negative people and not letting that negativity into her life. And I appreciate that because I've got some relationships in my life I can't do anything about right now. And I don't want to go into the specifics of that. We don't really have time, but she's right. You know, the more we can get rid of the non-essential relationships anyway, and maybe some of the others, you know, that carry that negativity with them, that can be such a soul-sucking, wear-out experience. And again, you know, when our energy and our strength is a premium, at a premium, and it's kind of limited, you know, we need to be able to separate what's yours and what's mine.
Yes.
And just deal with mine.
Well, this person was bringing me down so much that I didn't know what expressions I was making, but my coworker and friend was noticing that she could see hurt in my eyes for this person, and I was doing everything I could possibly think of to help them, and they were just telling me there's no hope, there's no anything. Yeah, everything's gone too far, all of this kind of stuff. It was almost emergency signs. It was just short of it. And she walked over to me, and this is going to be funny. I'm going to say it. She got a pen and a piece of paper and drew a toilet. And she said, when you're through, make sure you flush the little handle I drew or something like that.
So
it'll be gone. And it's like a mind set of, okay, when you're through with this, I can see the hurt and the heartache you're having from this person because you want to help them so bad that you don't know what else to do. And some people are past that limit, and I don't know that to be the fact. And I always believe in hope beyond hope that someone will find that help they need. And so, but she drew that, and when I saw that, I cracked a big smile and said, you know, she's right. I got to walk away from this for now and start over tomorrow or the next day with this person. And
right.
I just wanted to share that with you.
Well, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did. You need to parcel it out. You know, a resentment, a re-feeling of anger is something that has been building over a long period of time. You know, when you just get mad at something happens and you get mad, that's a quick response. A resentment is something that's been simmering for a long time. And that mindset, you know, those wires have kind of got set in place and they are a little unmovable. They've started to get kind of petrified, you know, with time. And so you can't undo, you know, in a week or two what maybe somebody has been working on diligently. Like I was polishing that resentment collection I had up on the shelf analogy earlier, you know, if somebody's been doing that for years,
that
you can't undo
analogy.
It, you know. And they also have to have the how, you know. I've got a relative, and every time you talk to him, it's a litany of negativity. And every time you talk to him and give him a suggestion, just a suggestion, you know, that might be helpful, he gives you all the reasons why not. You know, that isn't going to work for me because I've tried that. And then they get angry at you, you know, and raise their voice at you. You're just another thing to be angry with, you know.
I actually care about this person a lot. I want to see them prosper and make it, but I said, listen, this is an independent living center you've come into, and this is a brain injury office we're working in, but I can't do it for you by myself. If you're not putting in any effort, it's just like I'm talking in the dirt. There's nothing happening.
Yes.
Said, you've got to come and meet me halfway. I can't go in there and pull. I can't be a bulldozer and push all the dirt for you. Something like that, I was saying.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's the how I was talking about. The honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. A person has to see their part. They can be a victim all day long, but they've got to start by seeing their part in it in order to get honest, and then understand that those victims aren't hurting them anymore. They are hurting them by hanging on to whatever the perpetrators did in the first place. And it isn't that the feelings aren't valid. It isn't that those bad experiences weren't true. It's all justified, but we only have one life, and none of us knows how long it's going to be. And so we really, I think I really want to work on letting go of those things and dumping the emotional trash and toxicity that I allow to be in my life. And I bring this topic up because everything isn't a stroll in the park for me. I've learned most of these things the hard way, and I've demanded to learn it the hard way. You know, you guys who have listened to this show for a while probably get an idea generally of what kind of personality that I have, and it isn't easy going. I'm not that type 2 personality that they're talking about. I'm a type A personality. So I already had issues before I had my rupture with opening my mouth, you know. And, you know, it caused some wreckage. And so if nothing else, I like to try to practice some damage control these days. And the other thing they were talking about earlier was the forgiveness part. Ron, you know, was talking about how important forgiveness is. And, you know, forgiving ourselves is a huge one. And I think, you know, Ron brought up a great point, and that's that you don't have to like it. It's like when I was talking about acceptance a couple shows ago, I read a thing on acceptance. And it's the same thing with forgiveness. You don't have to like it. You don't have to change your mind and say what the person did was right and you were wrong. It isn't about that. It's about freeing ourselves to have the best life we can have, unencumbered by the anger and the resentment. And so we forgive them to help ourselves, really. So first we have to be able to admit that it's causing me grief today.
That's for sure. You're dead on the money with that.
Not those other people. It's causing me grief in my chair today. What can I do about me today? Not what can I do about them 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 5 minutes ago. What can I do about me right now?
Yeah.
Do I need to take a deep breath? You know, do I need to write? Do I need to talk to someone else? Do I need to say that serenity prayer like 59 times at 100 miles an hour until I'm so tired I just go to sleep and wake up with another attitude? But somewhere there's got to be a release valve. But we do have one other caller. We have a couple other callers on the line, but I do need to take, we have 90 seconds left. So for those of you who want to stay for overtime, you have to be logged into the show or you need to quick call 424-243-9540. We want to thank our sponsor, TBILaw.com. That's Gordon Johnson. If you have any legal issues with your TBI, check him out. We want to thank Craig Cecilia, our master host of Brain Injury Radio. I want to thank all of you live listeners and otherwise listeners. I'm sorry. For those of you who are leaving, thank you so much for being here. We're here 7 nights a week. I'm going to close in the usual way with something I believe we all have. And that is a guardian angel. For those of you staying on for overtime, sit tight, 51 seconds. This is Leah West.
God replied, yes, it's your time to leave. But don't you worry, you won't be there alone. You see, there's someone who's been waiting for you.
Okay, we're on the other side of the hour. I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody. So, Ron, you're unmuted again. We have one caller I will let on that hasn't gotten to talk yet. Area code 765, you're on the air.
Hi, Kim. It's Matt.
Muffin!
How are you? Good show. I like the conversation well. I like interesting things like that, and things that are personal, and things that mean right to our heart, and things that we go through with and stand every day. You know, things that doctors can't really explain to us. They can, but just the basics, just the outlines, if you will, or what's them college books, the little yellow college books called?
Oh, Cliff Notes.
Yeah, those Cliff Notes. They can hand us the Cliff Notes, but they have no idea what the whole vocabulary means.
Right. So, well, growing up in a Irish and Italian home, you know, I had some hot-headed family members, and so I learned to be hot-headed. And, you know, that was the behavior that was modeled, you know, for me. And that was what I learned to do, and it didn't work so well with other people sometimes.
Right.
You know, who didn't grow up in an environment that way. I scared the hell out of them.
Believe it or not, my great-grandfather came over on the potato boats. My grandfather was one of his first sons born in America, actually the second man or the second child. But I come from an old family. My grandpa had children old, my dad had children old, and I guess I follow too. I got a kid.
That's right, you do.
Three of them.
Are they all daughters?
Yeah, all three beautiful daughters.
That's what I thought. So do you think you hold resentments, or do you try to do something to, you're usually in a pretty good mood, but I know that you can get pretty angry too. Do you actively know when that anger is messing up something in your life and try to do something to diffuse that?
I can see it, and a lot of it I've discovered is really just irritability or frustration maybe. Now, my training that the Wayne County Sheriff's Department gave me through for 3.5 years, I understand anger pretty well and where it comes from and how I have really no control on it, no matter how well I've been taught to train for the warning signs and such. But then again, they piss me off, damn it.
Yeah, well, and there are going to be things that make us angry. There's things that make me angry all the time, but you know, it's
right.
the things I can do something about, the things I can't do anything about, you know, and even like the right now, when I said that about, is there anything I can do about it today? You know,
right.
That really has been one of the things that's helped me the most, and that's trying to stay a day at a time and do a day at a time, because there might be something I'm angry about that I'm going to be, more will be revealed, and there might be something I can do about it later, or I might be able to let go of it easier later. But
sure.
Today, You know, is there something I can do about it today? If there's not, I want to go plant a flower, visit a friend, you know?
There you go. I like that attitude. That's, you know, my neuropsychologist, and she is so smart, Dr. Backhouse, she told me once in a personal little meeting that I was trying to get over my anxieties and frustrations and being upset. And she asked me that 10 years from now or 5 years from now, where did I see my life? And, you know, she understands and she knows I understand the dementia and the things that might come from this within the next few years. However, you know, I told her that was my biggest concern and worry was getting to dementia or some way of not having any control whatsoever because I don't want to go back to being on everybody else's shoulder.
Right.
And she said, okay. She said, okay. And what if you went to sleep tonight knowing that you wasn't going to wake up in the morning? Would you be comfortable with where your life is now?
Good question.
Oh, man, it pounded me. She stood all the way back, and for the next 2 days I was stunned just sitting at the wall thinking about that stuff.
Yep, I'll give you another one. Les Paul gave you a good one, and that was I'd really like to see that. You know, maybe you could post that on your show page, the picture of that toilet. I'm a really bad, well,
okay.
I've got to quit that label about being a bad artist because I redeemed myself later in life, but I wouldn't be able to draw a toilet. So the one that I use in my mind when I'm doing the letting go or turning it over thing is like I'm driving into the bank drive-through. And I take my issue and put it in that canister. And then I put it in the deal and I hit send. And whoosh, when it shoots up to God. I'm turning it over to God and I'm letting go of it. And as you know, once you've hit that send button, you can't retrieve it and take it back until they give it, you know, back to you. But that's kind of the visual that I use for turning things over is that I'm going into the drive-thru at the bank. I'm putting my problem in that canister. I'm placing it in the machine. I'm hitting send, and it's shooting straight up to the air. I know another friend who has what she calls a God box, and she puts things that she can't do anything about today that have her jazzed into her God box. And she hasn't found the need to take the lid off the box and rifle through there and take any of those things out. She's done real good about when she turns it over and puts it in that box, it stays. I wish I was that disciplined about it because, you know, there's things sometimes that I let go of, but with claw marks, you know.
Yeah.
Not always easy. We have another caller. Area code 302, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. Cool new car. Did everybody
see
Sarah's cool car?
It's on Facebook, but a lot of people don't
have
me added, so it's okay. I think I added you less, but I'm not sure. But I didn't want to call in earlier just because I really don't have much to say about anger because I dealt with all that stuff in my adolescence. Like, I had a lot of issues, like my dad left and stuff like that. So I had I acted them out kind of like maybe in negative ways through my adolescence. And when I got to my early 20s, you know, the accident happened when I was 23. So that's still in my early 20s. And I just wasn't an angry person because I dealt with so much of my baggage pre-accident that the only baggage that I really had was accident stuff. And I was never like, you know, why me? Because my fiance died. So I was like, okay, why him? And then it was more, you brought up, you said something about God. And I learned this just a couple years ago, you know, the whole let go and let God deal with it kind of thing. And once I accepted that, that was like a huge weight lifted off my shoulders because I know God's strong enough to handle anything that if I can't handle it for the moment, I'll just pass it on to him or just put it on the side and deal with it when I can. And, you know, I was listening to Matt, too, talk about it's more frustration. And I had a lot of that because I had severe nerve damage in my right hand, which was my dominant hand, so it wouldn't do what I wanted to do. And, you know, I would have that, like, momentary tantrum for like less than a minute or whatever, and then I would realize, okay, well, let's do it again. Let's do it again to get my hand the way it is now. And no one can tell that I had any nerve damage. Like, anybody walking off the street could never tell. I mean, I still have stuff, you know, that only I know and people that I know kind of stuff. Like, you know, when it gets real cold and things like that and it gets stiff. But it's just, it's more frustration. And it's annoyances. Like, and I don't know. I don't let anger waste my time because I learned, like you said, basically, it eats away at you, and I just don't allow, you know, I might have, like, my down moments, you know, of just feeling crappy that day or whatever, but I don't want it to ruin the entire day just because it's one moment that something bothers me.
And that's a really good point, too, Sarah, and that's that, you know, that old saying, I'm having a bad day. Somebody pointed out to me once that you can change the course of the day anytime you want, so... You know, if you get ticked off at 10 a.m. or 2 p.m. or whatever, it doesn't have to, quote-unquote, ruin your day. You don't have to have a bad day. There's no obligatory, I need to suffer for 24 hours after this. You know, you can observe the feeling, you know, that this feeling has happened and see if there's something you can do, if it's something you need to step back and take a breath, you know, before you cause some damage or if it's something you need to, well, that what's that old song, our boots scootin', Jenny might know, you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, know when to run. This is my big wisdom for the night. An old Kenny Rogers song, James. We're going to switch from the Beatles, but that's a really good point, Sarah. It doesn't have to screw up your whole day. We have the power when we get angry and we start building that to that rage or moving toward that resentment to say, you know, today, you know, I think where Ron was, it was maybe a little colder than here. At least we've had some really freezing weather, and today the sky was blue and it was sunny and I just had a sweater on instead of the big coat, didn't have my scarf and my hat and my gloves and all that stuff. And in this weather, I've said it before, and James was on one of the Facebook pages today where we were talking about chronic pain conditions, or, you know, pain conditions we have, like you were talking about your hand, Sarah, and mine's with my face, my incision line around my face and in my neck, and actually I've got it in my hands now too, but the cold weather and the barometric pressure seem to really affect that, and I can get up in the morning and not feel good, you know, or have this pain going on, and the tone could already start to be being set for the day just because I don't feel good and I maybe didn't have restorative sleep. So I'm on less sleep, I'm in pain, and my eyes have only been open 5 minutes. Now, you know, say something that ticks me off in the next 10 minutes and we're off and running for the day, you know, but it's good to be able to have discussions like this because then we can look for the good, look for the beauty, you know, and today, just for today, I was really grateful. The sky was blue. There wasn't snow on the ground. I wasn't freezing to death, tensing up all those things that cause me pain all the time in the winter. They weren't all bunched up like you get when it's freezing outside. And I was out taking pictures to drive you guys crazy of the dogs to post on the Facebook. But one of the things Jenny was talking about earlier, for those of you that didn't catch it, and this was kind of fun and funny for anybody else if you want to try it. I haven't been on a vacation in like forever because we've got 4 dogs, a bird, and 2 fish, and I can't find a babysitter anymore for our house. And I got 1 kid too many, I think. Nobody else wants to take that on, but I went to the zoo like a year and a half ago. And on Facebook, it's got that map thing, and I don't know a lot about how Facebook works. I kind of bumble my way through it. But this map on there has had me at the zoo for like over a year.
Oh, I saw that.
I mean, I went to the zoo, it was like a year and a half ago or something. I know it was a long time ago, but Facebook hasn't changed it. I've been at the zoo like for a year and a half, and so, you know, I was laughing at that, and I changed it. You know, I tried to change it, and I made it be that I was at Trader Joe's grocery store. I buy some of our healthier food there. And it did change it. It said I was at Trader Joe's. And then I thought, well, this is kind of fun. I wouldn't mind going, let's see, maybe to Ireland. So I did that. And I made a statement like I want to buy a sweater and, you know, something about walking to Ireland. And this guy said that you had to post a picture of some kind and then label the picture. And so I did. I went and found a beautiful picture of Blarney Castle. Boy, does that look like a cool place to, that was at least a really neat picture. Looked like a great place to visit. And then a picture of a Blarney stone and put it up. And I'll be darned, Facebook posted me as being in Ireland. And it was funny because a lot of people must have their Facebook like automatically on their phone or be by it all the time or something, because a lot of people knew I was kidding. They knew what I was doing over the course of the day. And then this girlfriend of mine from college got on there, Mary, and she really thought I was in Ireland. I said, no. I couldn't make it from the zoo to Trader Joe's to home tonight to do the radio show. That would be a really quick trip to Ireland. But that's pretty fun. So if you want to fool around and go on vacation without spending a dime, find a picture of the place you'd like to visit, post it, and where it is, and then Facebook will put you there. And you can go on vacation without paying a dime, and your friends will all think you're really well-traveled.
You need to tour the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Gary put, my husband put on his, he was kind of tickled about doing it. He read my page through at work. You know, he works for the, well, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say he works for the government, so he was sitting there looking at Facebook today. But anyway, he will sail right by that one. He noticed my post, so he wanted to try it, you know, when he got home. And so he said something about Kim wanting carry out, and he put us in Tokyo. So I've been around the world today, and that's what Jennifer was talking about laughing earlier today. It wasn't about resentments and anger. It was about traveling the world through cyberspace. So that was pretty fun. I think tomorrow I'm going to try to go to Tuscany, and that way I'll have both my Irish and my Italian heritage covered. And then I think I'll go visit Les Paul in South Carolina.
Come on.
Let's
down.
See.
We'll just hang out
I'll
for a while.
I'll see you Friday, Les Paul.
Okay. We'll have a good old time. I'll take you on a tour of Aiken County in Augusta, Georgia.
Okay. I got to write down, tell us again, we'll give your place a free plug for all the times you said it. I'm going to have to find a place and make a picture of it. So maybe I don't want it to be an independent living facility. What's some place that we'd like to go, our listeners? Where would we like to go in Aiken County that would be a fun place?
Well, one of the places Aiken County is famous for is horses. A lot of the world-class horses that you see on that make the big money in races and things are raised right here in Aiken, in Aiken County. And there, I actually have met some of the people who train horses and things because I know some of the people who work there. And it's beautiful in that area. I'm
so
trying to think of what.
A place because
Whiskey Road. Type Whiskey
here.
Road.
Whiskey Road sounds like a happy place.
In the old days, it was known for moonshine, being traveling up and down the road when it was a dirt road. And later on, it became a road, and moonshine runners used to go up and down the road. It's a very famous road. If you go to the Aiken County website or the City of Aiken website, I forget which it is, you'll find beautiful pictures of it. There's a long road where the trees all bend and look like a tunnel going over in that vicinity. I forget if that's Whiskey Road or one off the side of it. I forget what that is. I love going through that road.
Well, that's good. That'll be enough to for me to look for the picture and find a place to go.
Okay.
But that's kind of a fun game. I made a comment the other day.
Type up Whiskey Road, Aiken.
Yeah, I wrote it down. I'm going to go to Whiskey Road in Aiken. Check that out coming into the weekend and see how that is. It was really pretty fun to do that. I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know why I was at the zoo for a year, you know.
That's hilarious.
I was like, please,
Pam,
I love the zoo. Yes, Jenny.
Pam, it might have something to do with the picture that you have with the monkey on your shoulder.
That was the monkey on your back. Yeah, that's true. It could be. But, you know, that old saying of having the monkey on your back, I forget what... I know why I did that. That was one of the grandkids' monkeys, but I remember the old saying about
But if you were at the zoo, I figure they probably, because you're as close to primate as possible, they would have locked you in with the monkeys, and seeing you with a monkey on your shoulder, that would have made sense.
Yeah, I'm always afraid when I go to places that have locks on the door, they're going to keep me. So I'm very wary about those kind of places. And tomorrow, as a matter of fact, is the day that I'm going to do my field study on independent living and checking out the place that we have here that I didn't know that we have. And Les Paul, I've heard you say before the different things that the place you work deals with. This one is strictly brain and spinal cord injuries.
Okay. Is it an independent living center, or is it something similar by name?
I think it is an independent living center. It's Quality Independent Living, I think.
Sometimes a nursing home will say they're an independent living facility when that's totally the opposite of what we are. That's why I'm saying that. It's kind of tricky how people use the name sometimes, but an independent living center is for all people with all disabilities. That's why I'm wondering.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll be interested to know.
I know Kim is going to be going and doing some research and going in to find out some information and see about a host or a guest on a show.
Yeah.
If you just type Walton Options for independent living, that'll bring up the organization I work for, and it'll tell you how to contact other ones and everything. It's a wonderful place.
Okay. I did write that down. Yeah, this claims it's an independent living center. They have 60 acres, and it's strictly for brain trauma and spinal cord injuries. And what I had planned to do when I go there is find out what they do, because I didn't even know that they existed. My mom did tell me, you know, some things came out I wasn't aware of. And this is germane to our conversation, not about resentments necessarily, but, you know, my parents, it was 18 years ago when I had my rupture, and I was single, and they were able to handle everything for me, advocate for me. But I needed about 5 weeks after I got out of the hospital, and under normal circumstances, I would have been going to an independent living center. And apparently a discussion had been had with the neurosurgeon, and it was decided that I would go and stay at my parents' house for that month, let's say. And so I did, and I never knew that was an option. It was a really difficult 5 weeks, you know, very weak. I really couldn't walk. A lot of problems for about 5 weeks. But I never knew that was an option. And so I never thought about it. You know, I went home after that period of time, and I was at my own home where I lived alone for about 6 months after that. And I got along. It was hard, you know. I couldn't take many steps at a time, and all of that it was no fun, but I was at home, and I was really happy to be home, you know, after being in the hospital and away at my folks. But I just never even knew that we had that. I told you before that I didn't think we had any traumatic brain injury association here, and we don't. There's one somewhere on the other side of Nebraska, which is kind of weird, since the only place a person would be able to get surgery in Nebraska of the caliber that some of us have had to have is here in the city I live in, which is the largest city, and the capital is 45 minutes southwest of here. So they chose to put the only brain injury association, and it's called something else. It's spelled like Diane, so it's Brain Injury Awareness Network, I think. And I've also talked to them, but they're on the other side of the state, which is really a trip. You know, they're halfway to Colorado, and so I'm not sure what they're doing out there, because a lot of people with brain injuries can't drive or wouldn't feel comfortable driving that far, you know, that they would put it on the other end of the state out of the populated area where the hospital would be. And the doctors, the neurosurgeons, there isn't any neurosurgeon out where this place is doing any of the procedures we've had, I'll tell you that. But in any case, this independent living center there is one here. It's the only one, but I'll be very interested tomorrow.
What is it called?
It's Quality. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have brought this up. I can't remember, but I.
That's all right.
But I'm going there tomorrow, and I'll remember, because what I hoped to do when I made contact with them and with this brain association. Yes, Jenny. That's right. It's like BIANE, I think, .com. But when I made contact with both of these places, it was because, first of all, I didn't even know about that these kind of places existed before I started, you know, talking to you guys and doing radio and hearing what you guys had to say, and it made me curious. And so I sought out to see if we had these places, because no medical professional ever told me about them. No shrink ever told me about them, and I had never met another survivor, so I didn't know. And so I found this place, and I contacted them, not so much as a survivor, although they know I am one, but as a radio host looking for information that would help our listeners, survivors and caregivers, and they invited me to come out and to meet several people that work there. They said that they have a program there that I think she said they're one of the only ones in the United States with a certain program that they have, and more will be revealed. But in any case, they said I wanted to talk to them threefold. One was to see about anybody who works there that would be a guest on the show, you know, so that they could tell us a little bit about what they do, and maybe they'll have some recovery-related things, hopefully, considering where they work, that they'd like to share with us. The second thing is there's got to be a lot of survivors there, you know, and two things on the survivors. One of them is that we all have a story. Somebody there might have a story to tell that we'd like to hear. I'm sure a lot of them. And the other thing is to make them aware that we exist. I mean, these guys, the woman I talked to on the phone anyway, didn't know Brain Injury Radio existed. And so they were all very intrigued with the concept. That's why they wanted me to come there. I kind of hesitated. It was, I don't know what the hesitation, fear, anxiety, I'm not sure. I don't really know what the feeling was, because I talked to a lot of people on the phone about being guests. And when she was so intrigued about the concept, which most guests usually are, they're getting free exposure on here, you know, those kind of guests. For-profit guests. And So they were very intrigued. But she was rattling off different people that worked there, and she was very excited about the prospect of it and invited me out. And I wasn't expecting that.
Okay.
Like, oh.
Well, I just wanted to tell you, I don't mean to interrupt, but I posted something on Facebook a minute ago, and I see it's moving on down the list. And it talks about all the independent living centers for every state. You just click the link, and it should show a map of the United States, and you click each one on for your state, and it's all the statewide. It says SILCS 2012, and that stands for Directory of Centers for Independent Living Council.
Can you find Nebraska?
Let me see.
I'm afraid.
It's on here.
What?
It's here.
What's it called?
It's just a map you click, and then it opens it up. Let me see.
Oh, because I'm sure Q is in there. Quality living something. I don't have my notes right with me, and I can't go back to my office. But in any case, tomorrow at 1:45, I'm going to go out there and spend some of the afternoon, get to meet a few people in their staff. It's going to be a meeting with several of their employees and myself, and so I'll get to hear from several people that work here, what kinds of things they do and what kind of services they offer, and I'd be interested to know if they offer services for non-residents, people like myself as a survivor, because I've heard you talk about that before, some of the things that are available to people who aren't residents necessarily. And then what they've got going on for the people that are there. She said that they have 60 acres. They're not developed, but they have a lot of plans for it. So I don't know. But it should be interesting and eye-opening, and I hope that, you know, it'll be a good thing. I'll feel glad about
exciting.
It. Yeah, I'm excited about it just to let people know. I don't know how many people, in fact, that's maybe one of the things I'll find out. Like, how many people do you figure live at your independent living center? Do you know? Have any idea?
None of them live at it. All the employees, whether they're a volunteer or an employee, are people with disabilities, and we go home. We don't have people living there. That's the difference. See, some people will call an independent living center a place where you live. That's the difference. It might confuse you if you don't look it up. It's totally different. See, we have Walton Rehabilitation Hospital just a mile and a half from where I work, and that is an actual hospital where people stay, and we're tied in with them even though we're a different organization. We're Walton Options for Independent Living, totally separate corporation, brother and sister network, you can say, and that work together to help each other, that are totally funded differently and everything. We're people with disabilities working to help other people with disabilities to live their best life they possibly can.
Well, and I've heard you say that there's a large percentage of the people that work where you do that have disabilities, so I'll be interested to know if that's the same. So it'll be a real discovery.
Say this to them and you'll know. Say, are you a consumer-controlled organization? Because when you come to Walton Options, one of the really cool things, or any independent living center, is consumer-controlled is one of the very top things. And that means, like, you walk in and you say, I'd like to sign up and see what I can do with Walton Options after talking with us for a while. And you become a consumer and you're our boss. You actually are in charge of us.
Wow.
And we work together to help you find the very best possible way of the best outcome for you. And my job is I'm in peer support and advocacy through the brain injury support group. And they call me a jack of all trades because I get to do a little bit of everything, whether it's talking with the news media or whatever. And if a new brain injury survivor comes in, I'm usually one of the first one to meet with someone, but we have other brain injury survivors too, and kind of show them the ropes of how to find a new way for them. And I ask them what my supervisor asked me. When they say, what do you want me to do? I say, well, what would you like to do? And it opens up doors. As, what do you mean? I'm not used to being asked that. That's exactly what I used to say. No, it's your life, and we're here to help you with it. We're not here to control it. Because too many people after a brain injury, their lives have been under the control of other people, and they don't feel ahead of life. And that's what's so wonderful about where I work.
I'm writing some of these things down, all of these things down, actually, that you've said, because obviously I know nothing about this. So most of what I've learned about this, I've heard from you. That piqued my curiosity, and now I've got a date. So I will know the answers to a lot of these questions
okay.
of yours by my next show. And so I'm
just
hoping
look
that
up your
we'll...
statewide independent living council. And that
mm-hmm.
should have several links. It's mandated that every state has an independent living center, and there's many in each state. And a lot of people fought and died for us to have the right to even do the things we're able to do, because back in the 50s and 60s, people with disabilities were treated like trash, and sometimes still are now. I mean, we think we've had it bad now. I've met people that told me it was so horrible back in the day that we've got it so easy. And this person that happened to be one of the founders of the ADA, like Ed Roberts, like Craig often talks to, and he met Ed Roberts also, and he said, the thing we've lost is the fire in the belly, because we've got it so good sometimes, even though it is bad
mm-hmm.
for a lot of us. But America's got it so easy that we don't always go, so, okay, let's do a protest march, and we sing We Shall Overcome until they start paying attention to brain injury survivors. I don't mean to take so much time. I'll stop there.
No, that's fine. That's fine. No, I think that's great, and I appreciate all of the input that you've had. I hope that we're able to get, that I'm able to get professional people
yeah.
as guests, but also some survivors and get to meet some survivors. And one of the things I was thinking of in that is we talked before, you know, we were talking earlier about energy being at a premium, and we also talked about the cool new collar line. I'm sorry, what's it called? Our new Brain Injury Radio's newest endeavor, the...
I can't say it. No,
I know. Anybody?
Brainline.
Brainline. Okay. You know, we were talking about, even though it's only a few hours, and Sarah, you might be good, now that you're unattached to your other volunteer deal, maybe the call-in, the caller line, but some of us would be a good thing, a good place, a new place for you to channel all of the good recovery information that you have is being on this new caller line. But some of us hosts were talking about it, and I was saying, I'll just speak for myself, that, you know, it's more than just the 1 or 2 hours a week of the radio show that's put into this 1 or 2 hours a week.
Yeah.
Whether it's thinking about what to talk about, interviewing people, going on this first field trip, you know, that I'm going on tomorrow, or whatever it is, it's more than 1 or 2 hours being put into these shows, and I just didn't see where I was going to have the energy physically or emotionally or otherwise to help with the caller line, too. And so one of the things I was thinking about, and to me, God puts, I've said it before, the stones down in front of me, and then has people along the way holding a light, a lantern on the path, lest I not see where I'm going. But, you know, I was thinking about the people that they have contact with at this place I'm going tomorrow. And, you know, there might be survivors that are looking. We don't have any,
right.
like, support group or association or anything like that here in our city. I know we don't have that. And so for the survivors there to get to know that there is a place they can go 7 nights a week on our radio show, and if they're interested in doing volunteer work themselves and talking to others, we might have a volunteer job for them.
That would be really cool. And I just want to say this, how I got involved with the Brain Injury Association of South Carolina. The support group that there was had kind of fallen apart, and there was only a few people just hanging around basically with no support group. And when I came in and started working with Walton Options, they said, Les Paul, here's something you might like to do. Build the support group back. And I'm going, me? Are you serious, me? I didn't think I would be able to do it. I didn't think I knew what to do. But after going to some trainings and things, our group grew and it kept growing. And we've got a strong group in our North Augusta, South Carolina, and we've got a big group in Augusta, Georgia also. So you might be the person who it needs to be, or someone who you know that you might meet.
That's what I was thinking. You know, there is another. I already facilitate 4 days a week. I don't talk about that on here because it's not related. But well, it is and it isn't. But I facilitate a recovery group 4 days a week, and so I do that already 4 days a week,
okay.
And then do the radio show. And so I'm not sure that I'm going to be that person, but I can certainly be that bridge person, the networker who helps find those people, and
yeah.
Maybe who even helps them get the group up and running. I don't know specifically about brain injury support groups because I've never been to one, but I do know a little bit about recovery groups in general, so I could certainly support someone or hear from one of you or Craig or from the association that Sarah was just working at, or this one out in Western Nebraska, you know, get a kit,
yeah.
If they have such a thing, you know, and
hey,
maybe get somebody up and running. Sorry, Sarah?
No, I just wanted to say, can I say something? Because I haven't spoke up in a while.
Yeah.
I wanted to give you guys kind of a heads up on what's going on. So the place that I was volunteering here, I'm not going to say their name just because I'm just whatever, but right now, I'm going to write them a rebuttal letter. Like we already talked about what kind of they wrote to me and things like that, but I'm also going to CC it to the Brain Injury Association of America and let them know what,
hey.
You know, the chapters in the other states are doing, and then I'm going to CC also an attorney. So I'm going to cover all my bases and make sure, because I know I'm not doing the bad thing by holding them accountable, and I think they're trying to intimidate me and silence me like they do the other people in our freaking organization, that I need to stand up and say something. And that's why I emailed you, Kim, earlier, and I asked you if I could, like, run it by you so you could kind of not proofread it because everything's spelled right and the grammar's good. I just wanted to kind of know your opinion, you know, just an outside, because I've been writing it for, like, 4 days, like, you guys talk about writing things and rewriting it, and every moment, you know, it gets better and it gets more professional and more articulate, and I want it to be on point. I want these words.
Did you send that, Sarah? Did you send that to me?
Yeah, no, I didn't send it to you. I gave you a heads up and asked you if I could send it to you, like if you would read it. I'm not going to send it to you if you don't want to read it.
Oh, no, yes. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I thought I missed an email. No, sure.
Oh, no.
Go ahead.
It was like two sentences basically just asking if you would, because I know you get like a lot of mail, so I don't want to send you some like literally three-page freaking letter if you have, you know, you don't have time to read it. That's all.
No, that's fine. Send it. I hadn't seen that yet. Maybe I was busy going to Ireland
or
something.
It was right before the show, so you were busy.
Okay, I haven't been back to the office. You know, Gary goes to bed at 8, and I'm off limits. I'm in the front of the house then. But, yes, that's good. I'll see it tomorrow and respond. But, sure, go ahead and do that.
Sweet. Thank you.
So at that place, did they have a kit that told people how to make a support group?
No.
Okay, well, that's not very helpful.
Sorry. You asked the question.
Well, I mean, that is a brain association, right? So, assumedly, I would hope that, and that's what I'll suggest to the place in Western Nebraska if they don't have one, and then I'll be in the same boat as you, Sarah, except I'm not volunteering. I'm just going to say, you know, really, what do you do for survivors?
I'm sorry. Were you asking if they have support groups?
Well, if they had, like, some kind of a kit or something to help, like, you know, people who wanted to start a support group material.
Oh, no, that's the sad thing about this organization, and that's what bothers me the most, and that's what's in my letter, is they don't help anybody become independent. They just hold these events for, like, stupid things, like a crab feast, or, like, they have, like, it's a family fun day, or, I don't know, it's something they have in April. It's like a spring, or it's a spring fling is what it's called, and it just gets, like, you know, 20 people, and then their relatives, or maybe not even 20 survivors, probably even less than that, just
well,
get together.
Basically, they're raising money. They're having fundraisers, events.
That's what I'm saying that's annoying me, is that they're having, like, day events that's not going to help these people become productive members of society. There is
right.
all of these stupid little frivolous social things that we don't really even want. What we really want and what we really need is to be independent and find out how to live our own lives, and they're not doing that. And that's kind of what my letter's about, and that's why I wanted to let you read it.
Yeah, I think that's it's on point and a good suggestion, because I, you know, like I say, I've never had any contact with any of these associations like that before. And Brain Injury Association was nice. I had never heard of them, but I looked it up when I wrote my book, because I wanted some endorsements, I guess you'd call it, before it went to print. And so I saw there was only one national organization that when I Googled it, and it was the Brain Aneurysm Foundation out of Massachusetts. And I asked them if they'd be willing to read my book, and if they were on board with it, if they'd write me a review, and if they weren't, fine. But they were willing, and they did, and I really appreciate that. So I guess I have had one brush with an association, and they did a really nice, valuable thing for me, but now I've tried to contact them to get them to be a guest on here, and I'm not getting anyone to answer their national telephone line. And as far as the other one, the Traumatic Brain Injury Association, I just think that, and this radio show kind of proves it, you know, is that people that are survivors are looking for support, and there's answers we're not getting from the traditional medicine side of things. And we can go to a therapist or something like that and talk about it, but if they haven't walked a mile in our shoes, they can give us some practical advice, but not any true understanding. And what I found out in another part of my life is that people in recovery, helping people in recovery, is one of the most effective ways of treating things like addictions, for example. 12-step groups have a higher success rate of any other drug or treatment plan when it comes to addictions. And I think that while we need medical, traditional medical treatment, certainly, that on the recovery end of what we've had physically go wrong, we've also had trauma to our psyche, you know, and that the best way to be heard and understood is by other survivors. And so to me, it seems like a no-brainer, no pun intended, that these associations would have some kind of a packet together about how to start a survivor support group.
Hey, you know what? Let me comment on that, too. I figured out that there's money involved. They need to show, as an organization, why are they important to our, like, community or whatever? They have to answer to other people because they get grant money. And when you get grant money, sometimes, you know, you have to do specific things that the person that's giving you money wants you to do. So that's what I found out in the organization. So you have to prove to them where you're using the money, and that's why they have the art program for, like, six people. It's not even six people. It's less than that. So they have these little things that they can write, like, oh, this is what we're doing with your money, and then they get more money. So the support groups are a big thing. They don't want you to have your own support group, because then if they say, oh, only two people are going to be showing up, then they're going to say, oh, it's not cost-effective enough to keep the lights on and keep the building on or waste our time to do this if there's only two people. Like, that's really what I believe. What I've learned internally is amazing, because I blindly trusted my organization, because you can hear from, like, a couple months ago on the show, you know, I raved about them. And that was, like, really kind of not embarrassing right now, but just, like, it just sucks that these are the people that I kind of, like, I had their back. I would have done anything for this organization because I totally believed in what I thought they were. But they don't live up to their mission statement, and it is just like a kick in the pants to get me to do something positive with this. So I'm going to go actually to a support group this Thursday, and it's different. We have we only have 3 counties in our state, and we only have we don't even have one in the lower county. They actually left the brain injury thing because they didn't like our organization anymore. They didn't like to be told what to do. Anyway, so it's the one that's southern from where I live. That's the one that's kind of the bad one. The one up at my house is really nice. They have it's like a two-parter. You go in for I think it's 7 or whatever, and then you go in if you have someone or not. But then they split it up after an hour, where survivors are in one room and caregivers in another room. And it's really cool because I started facilitating for the survivors in the support group in the lower county for me, the southern one. I was asked by the executive director to help facilitate with that because they needed extra hands. That was awesome. When these people, our people, could tell me things that they said they didn't feel comfortable telling other people in the organization, it was awesome, because it was just all of us talking and sharing, and we were sharing other ideas. Like, you know, one person was having a problem with something, and another person suggested and said, hey, this works for me. And they fed off of that. You can't get suggestions from that from people that don't understand your situation. And other survivors do. And it was just, I don't mean to be on my soapbox for a minute, but you guys already know I'm passionate. Sorry. But it's just, I really felt a sense of wholeness, a completeness in myself. And I feel like these people that took it away from me they're trying to, brush everything that they did under the rug. They behave unprofessionally and unethically, and they want to blame it on me and kick me, brush me under the rug. And it really bothers me that they would treat me like this. But on top of that, it's just a human being thing. Like, you can't just lay someone off that's been volunteering through an email. You can't even call them. And when they call you to have you call them, you never call them back. It's immature. Grow up. This isn't middle school. Like, be an adult. And then she's going to send me this letter. It's like, come on, man. Like, we're 2 adults. We could talk about it, and it could be the end, and I can help you improve your organization because I got a lot of great ideas. I'm not putting blame on anybody. I'm just saying, hey, let's get it all collectively together and help everybody else out. But it's like they got to bring their issues into it. And it's like, dude, it's not about you. It's about the people we need to be helping.
Yeah.
Like, keep your crap at home. Like, we don't need that. We already got enough crap. We got to focus on the organization. And they forget the big picture. Sorry.
Well, that's okay. That's where I think you can be helpful, because, you know, when you talked about the money, you know, the events are swell a couple times a year, and they're doing fundraising to pay the corporate salaries and all of that business. I even get that that's how things work. I know that you had an expectation, which was a reasonable expectation, and you're hurt and disappointed at the way they behaved, and all of that's valid. But, you know, the 12-step groups I was talking about, the only cost they'd have in a brain injury association would be the cost of the paper and somebody's time to put together that kit that will only need to be put together once. It's a how to do a support group kit. So somebody just needs to think of it and do it once, and then they need to make photocopies. You know, for 12-step groups, I'll give you an example. In Omaha, Nebraska, there's 765 Alcoholics Anonymous meetings a week.
Holy crap.
A week in this town. And interestingly, churches, a lot of times, will give the room. They don't charge you to have a meeting in the room. Yeah, there's a lot of drunks in Nebraska. It gets kind of boring around it. But yeah, 765. This is a big recovery town. I mean, it was obviously a big partying town, but to be able to have 765 meetings a week in a town our size says there's a lot of recovery here, and there are places that give you rooms. You know, they don't even have to spend the money. The Brain Injury Association doesn't even necessarily have to spend money. a lot of these 12-step meetings are held in churches, you know, office buildings. A lot of times people that Les Paul's giving us the address for the Council on Independent Living in Pennsylvania. That'll help Jenny. In any case,
Harrisburg is like really like north and west of us. It's like Pennsylvania is pretty big, where it's a couple hours to get across the state.
Just yeah, that's what I was going to say. For the one in Nebraska, that Brain Injury Association that's here in Nebraska, it's like 4 hours.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, I mean, that's so crazy. There's not even any, I mean, if there's hospitals out there, there's only one level, that level one trauma or whatever kind of hospital here in the biggest town in the state. And so why they would put an association 4 hours out, I give up. But I'll be sure to ask, you know, when I'm asking them if they have a kit, because, you know, these things can be worked out where people are willing. And what you're talking about, the feeling that you had by being a survivor, talking to the other survivors, is exactly the feeling and the dynamic that goes on in these 12-step meetings. And that's where I think your energy, you can write your letter, I'll look at it, you can do all that, but chances are it ain't going to change the way they're doing things.
No, the only reason I wanted to write the letter was to give them a second chance, to know in my heart that I did everything I could, and then I'll accept it and let it go. Like, that's how I am. I always pretty much give everybody and everything a second chance, and then I write them off if, you know, the outcome wasn't what I would expect it, or what, you know, what I would like it to be, to be mature and, you know, whatever. You know, but we don't control other people. So I need to know if the outcome isn't to my liking to move on and have a plan B, and if that's start my own like, freaking support groups, then that's what it means. But I just need to know and close the door on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we all need closure on those things that get to us. But at least, you know, there are some other options, and it's too bad. I mean, I would be disappointed too if when I talk to this place in western Nebraska, they don't have some kind of a format to help people start support groups. You know, I guess I'd maybe look for a kit, maybe put a kit together, mail it out to them, and tell them they might want to work on that. You know, I'll do the work for them, you know, and the research for them, you know, and then hopefully they'll be on board with it. Maybe this place I'm going to here tomorrow, this independent living center or whatever it is that I'm going to, you know, that they would be open and willing to having that kind of thing, because I truly believe that survivors helping other survivors is, it's good, you know, it's good for all of us, you know.
Hey, just two more things. Sorry to cut you off. But you might need to create more support groups because you're a populated state. My state, we don't even have 1 million people in the state. Like, so we don't need that many support groups because there's really not that many people. It's not even about that, though. Like, I have no problem starting it. It's just the connections. Because we're not that heavily populated, we really don't, I don't know, there's not really many social interactions with, like, the community and too many things, and it's sad. But, I mean, there's stuff in the city and things like that, but it's not like where I live, I can research, but there's nothing specific, like, to find other people. Like, there's not, like, a one website where you can find all support groups or all, because even the paper sucks. Like, the newspaper that we get doesn't put, like, half the freaking support groups in there because they're just too lazy. They put, like, entertainment news in there. Ugh.
Right. Well, one way to do it is maybe through, like, if I was going to do it, I'd probably go to the hospital, the only level one trauma place here that has the only neurosurgeon who could clip an aneurysm, for example. I'd probably go down to that office and let them know I was interested in starting a support group for survivors and maybe do some interaction that way, because if the doctor's office cared any more than these associations cared, then maybe they would help feed that group. And I'm sure it would take time. You know, the 765 meetings a week here in that other arena didn't all spring up in one day. It was over a long period of time. So it just takes time and resourcefulness, I guess. But we are at the end of our show. I don't want us to get cut off in the middle of somebody's sentence. So I want to thank you all so much for being here tonight. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed the show, or at least got something out of the show that you can take with you or provoke your thoughts a little bit. Look forward to the shows the rest of the week. Again, I want to thank our sponsor, TBILaw.com. Gordon Johnson, thank you. Gordon Johnson of TBILaw.com, and our master of ceremonies, Craig Cecilia, for providing shows 7 nights a week, same time, same place, 7 different hosts. Please tune in again. We're so glad to have you here. And I'm going to close the show tonight with a song called Never Alone by the Hard Times Band. And in the spirit